The Market Musings Podcast.
Hello, welcome to Stopbox, to today's Market Musings episode. I'm Pam Sidhu, and today I'm joined by Nicole Galloway-Warland, the Managing Director of Thor Energy. Very warm welcome to you, Nicole. Thanks for joining us today on our podcast episode.
Good morning, Pam. Nice to be here.
It's great to have you with us. Now, do you know, this just gives us the opportunity to delve that little bit deeper than we normally would into your story and, of course, Thor Energy. Now, you've got over 25 years' experience in mining and exploration. So that's really impressive, Nicole. But let's take it right back to the beginning. What made you want to become a geologist?
It's not the classic story of, you know, someone collecting rocks. I didn't get the Year 12 mark to get into veterinary science, so I was quite devastated. And my father said, have you thought about doing geology? They drive around in four-wheel drives and go camping. And I thought, oh, okay. And I've never looked back. I've been very fortunate that I've chosen a career and 30 years later still love it.
You went for something completely different. And then, yeah, and there's a big contrast between veterinary and geology, but this is where you found your love.
Yeah, look, I think, you know, there probably is similarities from a science background, but rocks, animals, yes, quite different.
So where did you study? Where did you go to university?
So I studied in Sydney, Australia, so the University of Technology.
Wonderful, wonderful. Now, you are one of the few women in the mining sector. How have you found that? Have you experienced inequalities?
Numerous. I started my career in the late 80s, so that sort of tells you how old I am. And when I first started work, it was at Mount Isa Mines in North Queensland, and I probably was a little bit idealistic. As a geologist, I thought maybe I would go into being a park ranger or save the world in some way, and secured a job working underground, which I loved. But at the time, women weren't allowed to work underground. But fortunately, the Queen had come to visit. So there was a clause in the Queensland Mining Act that obviously allowed her to go underground, and hence I worked under that clause for about 3 to 5 years.
Right. Amazing.
So, yeah, it pretty was an interesting time. MIM probably employed about 1,000 people and 400 underground, and they were all men except for myself.
Wow. So at that time, as you're saying, women were not allowed to go underground. And it was only because the Queen came that there was a clause which enabled you to do this. And after everybody, you said 400 people you employed, and they were all men, because that's the people that are stepping forward to come forward for the sector. What about, you know, things like safety? Because, of course, when you're mining, you can be mining in parts of the world, you know, where there may be, you know, different restrictions towards women or different safety aspect. Have you come across barriers there?
Yes, you know, geographically, like you said, there's a lot of cultures. You know, I did, you know, for example, some reviews of Papua New Guinea. And then when I said, you know, I was keen to get in the field, they all just looked at me and said no. And that's been the case in some of the African countries. Things have slowly changed, and obviously there's more women entering the industry, so I think the culture is shifting, but it's still, you know, something to be aware of in different cultures.
Yeah, yeah. So you think the culture is shifting, and it is, of course, shifting because of women like yourself that are the trailblazers that are paving the way for others, having done this in a male-dominated industry. You know, would you say your investors are mainly, you know, predominantly male?
Yeah, look, I think the industry in general, whether it be from, you know, exploration, mining, investors, brokers, it's still very much a male-dominated world.
Yeah. So let's bring it back to you, you know, and you mentioned that, you know, you were working in this project. You were able to go underground, as you said, that was the story. So what happened next then? What did you move on to do?
Look, I stayed with MIM or Mount Isa for quite a few years, working underground and working in mineral resource estimation, which I loved. But then it was time to move on to get experience elsewhere, and that's when I moved into exploration. And it's really exploration that I love. It's important to have some mining backgrounds. It gives you a bit of reality on what is an economic grade, tonnage, et cetera. But exploration or discovery is really my sort of space and passion.
And why is that, Nicole? What is it?
I think it's the adventure, it's the excitement, it's following something up from that first sort of discovery and then, you know, having a logical approach to build on that. You know, sometimes it's a success, other times it's not. But when you're involved in something, you know, from originally some stream sediment samples through to drill holes, through to resource, through to then, you know, turning it into a mine, that's pretty exciting to watch that happen.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's interesting you should say that because I'd love to hear more about your successes. You know, as you're saying, when you're doing exploration, you're doing discovery, it can be quite exciting. Can you take us back to a pivotal moment? Let's go back into time where you might have had a major find. What was it? Tell us about that moment.
Oh, look, I think, you know, you have to remember that any discovery is a team, so that you may have had one activity that led to that discovery, but there's obviously a team that takes it to that next level. So I suppose one of my key memories in that space was doing a stream sediment program in Queensland, and you have to take samples along the stream. So you do trap site samples, channel samples, and you might collect, you know, 20 samples, you know, throughout the day. And then on one particular occasion when I was panning it, you know, there was quite a lot of gold. And that was pretty exciting. And then that project, although I didn't stay with the project team, they then followed it up and it did become a mine, Tick Hill Gold Mine in Queensland. And that was, yeah, really exciting to sort of watch, you know, from the peripheral, how the team advanced that project into a mine.
Yeah, yeah. Sounds exciting. I mean, of course, you get your ups and you get your downs. You know, there's the highs and there's the lows. Can you tell us about, you know, because sometimes there can be, you know, companies can start off optimistically, but cash flow can perhaps dwindle. It might not be successful when exploring, when looking for that discovery. Have you been there in the past?
Yeah, with Uranium SA back in 2005, we discovered the Samphire uranium deposit and, you know, continued to do drilling on that, progressing that into a field leach trial. And then unfortunately, the uranium price plummeted in 2011 and we were all out of work essentially, and that project sat dormant up until a few years ago when Alligator Energy acquired that project and are now progressing it with the current uranium price. So projects do evolve, and as you said, the market is not always in our favour, but, you know, a good project will have that longevity and come out at the other end.
Nicole, now, of course, you've come across many different types of commodities. But what's your favourite commodity? You know, is it a case of diamonds are a girl's best friend, or what would you say it is?
Diamond exploration is a lot of sampling, so I'd have to say no on that one, and a lot of industrial diamonds. No, I think it's gold. There's something about gold. It's very tangible when you see it. It's special.
So it would be gold for you. And can you take me back to, I mean, I'm just imagining now when you're saying that there's something about gold when you see it. Have you been there when they've actually found gold or you know, gone to the site where gold has been found? And has that actually happened with yourself?
Yeah, look, quite a few deposits I've worked on. So whether it be in Queensland, our Ragged project in the Pilbara WA, often when you're exploring, you might, you know, pan gold. So you'll take some samples and then pan it, and you'll see either some small gold nuggets or a little bit of a fine gold tail in your pan. So, yeah, that's always very exciting.
I can imagine. And, of course, talking about being very exciting, you know, you've been all over the world, and we'll talk to you a little bit more about that in a moment. But where's your favorite place globally for exploring, for mining?
Oh, look, I've been very fortunate to work in a lot of different geological provinces across Australia, the Americas, and Eastern Europe. Eastern Europe, working in Ukraine, in particularly the Carpathians in sort of Western Ukraine, was pretty exciting. For me, you know, that was my first international experience, foreign language, foreign culture, but the people were just amazing and really sort of embraced you and wanted to help you grow, and they wanted to see you successful, and we were looking at evaluating three different gold deposits in the south, and that was great to work over there and do scoping studies on them.
Yeah, so you loved the people, you loved the culture, what you experienced in Ukraine. And is there other parts of the world that ring true to you that have that same effect?
Yeah, the Andes, Argentina was, again, quite spectacular. The landscape, the salt lakes, the mountains in the background, again, amazing geology, geography, but also the people. And it's often the people that make your experience very positive or negative.
Yeah, I can imagine. Now, you know, where's the place that you've been where it was quite negative? Where would you say that is globally? Where it was maybe a little bit more challenging?
That's probably a little bit more challenging. I think, you know, working in some of the outback Australian towns can be quite harsh environments, particularly as a female. But, you know, you've always got to be optimistic and look for those positives, and not be too judgmental or harsh on those communities.
So when you say it's particularly challenging as a female, what kind of things did you face? What kind of challenges did you face there?
Well, just working in remote camps or, you know, a mine sort of environment where you are the only female, it can be a little bit intimidating and overwhelming. And it's something I've learnt that I'm never going to be one of the boys, that I'm Nicole. So I've learnt that they have to learn to accept me. I'm not a prima donna either, but, you know, there's certain luxuries I like. And conditions that I expect from my team, you know, whether it be safety, whether it be environmentally conscious. So, you know, making sure the team, you know, have the right culture and we build the right culture together.
Have you ever been in that situation, Nicole, where you could maybe go into a situation like what you've just described there and thought, do you know, I'm going to need to call in some reinforcements here. I'm going to need a bit of support because they're just not working with me due to the fact that I'm a woman. Has it ever got to that point?
Not so much that, but certainly one of the areas I worked in Australia, I wouldn't drive by myself in and out of that project as a single female. So we always had to make sure there were two of us travelling in the vehicle. And I found that, you know, that's very sad to think that your safety is an issue or your team safety is an issue going to and from a work site. Yeah. So that, yeah, was very disappointing, but it was something that we had to work, you know, how can we work in this environment and what's the safest way for all of us to, you know, manage that.
Of course. Now, you know, you mentioned different parts of the world, different landscapes, different cultures, but what about different types of deposits? Now, you know, I'm sure you've worked with many different types of deposits. Do you have an affinity to a certain type of deposit? You know, talk to us a little bit more about this, because of course you've got VMS, you've got hard rock, you've got brine. You know, what would you say is your favourite?
Look, I don't really have a favourite style of geology or mineralisation as such. I've been fortunate to work over in WA, so in Archean and Lode Gold, and then more recently over in the US in the, you know, Jurassic aged sedimentary uranium. Each, I suppose, deposit has its unique characteristics, and it's understanding those characteristics and how you can then target new deposits or new, you know, mineralization in those. So I don't really have a favorite. I think it's just understanding the style of mineralization, but also being open-minded. You don't want to put everything in that little box. You've got to think outside the square, and, you know, not geology doesn't always conform to, you know, that box.
Wonderful. I like that positive attitude, which is obviously what's got you to this point. You know, 25 years is so impressive, Nicole. And I want to just fast track, you know, of course you've done lots through your career, but tell me, how did you come to Thor mining, which is what it originally was? What brought you to, tell us about what happened there?
Look, I've been in exploration for quite some time in senior sort of management. And the opportunity came through Mick Billing and through the Thor team to take on, the managing director CEO role. And it was, I think, at the right time. I was ready to take that on. I'd always felt I could add value as a director. And it came across just at the right time. So I was really pleased to join the team about 3.5 years ago now.
3.5 years ago. And it's quite interesting. We will speak a little bit more about Thor as in the company, but Thor, why that name? And also, you know, of course, because Thor is the name for the Norse god. But when you've come on, then also you've transitioned from Thor mining to Thor energy. Tell me more about that.
Look, I think with any company and team, we all bring our own skill set to that team. And that's really quite important. You don't want to just, I suppose, become stale. You've always got to be looking at opportunities. And also, what can your skill set add to that team or those opportunities? So when I joined Thor Mining, they were very much focused on the Molly Hill tungsten deposit. And I had a background in uranium, copper, gold. So there was a uranium project in that portfolio as well as copper. So I sort of, reviewed those projects and felt with my background and my skill set that I could really add value and, you know, potentially, you know, shareholder benefits from my skill set with those projects.
Why the switch from Thor Mining to Thor Energy?
Look, I think, you know, from my point of view, I wanted to really highlight that transition to our energy metal projects, so to the uranium projects as well as the copper gold project. So I wanted to keep Thor. I think Thor is a great name. So I didn't want to hide our legacy in any way. I wanted to embrace that, but almost embellish it with that Thor energy. That's what we're looking at with the green energy, you know, future.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the green energy future, and that is, of course, the way we're going. So I can see why, you know, you've brought in the name energy to encompass that. But, you know, as you mentioned, you know, your background yourself that brought you to Thor, you mentioned your background in nickel, was it nickel, copper and gold?
Yes, and uranium.
Yeah, and uranium. And, of course, that's what Thor looks at as well as lithium. Tell me, let's just look at the uranium at the moment. Would you say that that's going to be the main source of green energy moving forward?
Oh, definitely. We know renewables are fantastic. There's a role for renewables to play, but unfortunately it's not always sunny and the wind is not always turning. So we do need a baseload energy source. And that's where nuclear energy comes in. It's a green baseload energy source. And so I think the future is definitely in nuclear power.
Right, yeah. And, you know, tell us a little bit about your uranium projects with Thor.
So we've got three uranium projects in the Uravan Mineral Belt. So this is part of the Colorado Plateau. So it sits in Utah and Colorado. It's a historic, prolific mining district for uranium and the co-product, which is vanadium. A lot of history, mining heritage in the region. And unfortunately, with the uranium price dropping, a lot of deposits were left fully exploited, and other ones left unfound. So we're very excited to be in this jurisdiction. Also in the US, there's a sovereign security. The US are one of the largest producers of nuclear energy, and yet they don't have domestic supply. So very little domestic supply. And obviously with Russia invading Ukraine, they want their own domestic supply. So I think it's the right jurisdiction to be in.
Yes, yes. Now, I know that you are focusing on a project of a copper project in Australia. And this is something quite interesting because you're not mining there, are you? It's been extracted you're trading ISR. Explain to us, what is that?
So it's a copper oxide style of mineralization. And we are just really at the assessment stage of the project. But rather than looking at traditional open cut and underground mining, we're looking at in situ recovery. So it's really what's used in a lot of uranium mines. It's a system of wells where we inject a benign lixiviant, so a benign solution into the mineralized zone, and the copper is then dissolved and then extracted where it's stripped off. So there's very minimal surface disturbance. It's really just a pattern of polypipe, shall I say. And so from an ESG point of view, there's no big open cut, there's no waste dumps, no dust, trucks driving around, etc. So very minimal surface disturbance. The land post-mining could be returned to agricultural and farming land. So look, we think it's the way of the future. Obviously, not all deposits are suitable for in situ recovery, but we know we've got the right groundwater. This is hypersaline groundwater. So we're looking at, assessing the deposits with this style of mining.
Would you say that it's a much more greener way of mining?
Oh, definitely. So very much environmentally friendly. So not only the surface disturbance, but we're looking at a solution which is a food additive, so an amino acid called glycine. So looking at all aspects to make sure it's environmentally friendly.
Yeah. So not only are you producing energy for the future green revolution, you're also sourcing it that way as well, where possible. So that's quite interesting because, of course, this seems to be the new way forward in terms of, it's great that people like yourself are looking to see how can we do this in the most environmentally friendly way. But you've got exciting times happening at Thor, Nicole. You've got quite a lot happening towards the middle of the year in terms of projects becoming active. Tell us a little bit more.
Discoveries come through exploration and on-ground activities. So over in the US at our Wedding Bell project, we'll be on the ground again mid-year doing some resource drilling at Groundhog as well as Rimrock projects. So looking at building a JORC or an NI 43-01 resource there, but also continuing to evaluate some of the other prospects and anomalies around that area. So quite an extensive drilling program is planned for that second half of the year.
That's great. Sounds like you're going to be really busy. How do you feel personally about the progress and, with yourself being part of the company for 3.5 years, where would you say that you're at personally with it all now?
Oh, look, I think over when we first acquired the project over in the US, it did take us a bit of a time to understand the jurisdiction, build a team of geologists, and approvals personnel over there. We've now, I think, mastered is probably a bit of a strong word, but I'd like to say we've mastered it. And looking forward now to really building on those initial positive drill results. It's a nice high-grade mineral system over there. We're not looking at, we're looking at mining, but we're not looking at processing. We are very fortunate to have White Mesa Energy Fuels conventional mill within trucking distance. So that's really our objective, is to assess these projects, get them into a mining stage, and then truck that material to the mill for processing. So look, I'm very optimistic and excited about these projects. I've tried to highlight, I think uranium's the way to go, and particularly assets in the US. We know that they're the largest consumer of nuclear energy, so they need their own supply of uranium, the right jurisdiction. So yeah, I'm pretty excited about these projects.
Yeah, excited indeed. Well, thanks, Nicole. It's been great delving in a little bit deeper into your story and, of course, hearing more about Thor. But thanks for joining us today at StopBots.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to another podcast from Market Musings. Tune in next time.